Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hello, and welcome back to Quick Save, our gaming-focused segment of Comic Book Nation. I am your host, Logan Moore. Joining me today on Quick Save for the very first time is Evan Valentine. Evan, thank you for joining me.
Oh yeah, thank you for having me. I'm here to help protect democracy and talk about any and everything Helldivers. Cannot wait.
For sure. So Evan's setting it up there perfectly. Today we're going to dive into Helldivers. There's no real big new stories necessarily that we're going to dive into that have happened this week, or there's some stuff in the back half of the show that we'll dive into related to PlayStation. But for this episode, I wanted to kind of analyze Helldivers and what has been happening with this game since it launched earlier this year. This is by all accounts the biggest game release of 2024 so far. I think this and Final Fantasy are probably the two biggest that have come out so far. Pal World 2, I guess, has been lighting up the world, but Helldivers has really, I think kind of dominated the conversation online and has dominated everybody's attention. And we're now 2 months into this game having been out, and it doesn't seem like this game's popularity is dwindling whatsoever. It's just continuing to sell more copies. I think it's almost at like 10 million copies sold at this point. I guess just before we dive into anything else, like, Evan, what do you think it is about this game that has proven to be so popular? Why do you think it has this amount of staying power? And what is it like? How do you feel about the updates that have continued to come about for this game post launch that are keeping people engaged with it?
I think it's Helldivers 2 is such an interesting case study. I think that one of the things, like, its beauty is in its simplicity. I think that there is a being able to jump into these different worlds where you're fighting bugs and you're fighting bots and you're playing with like three of your friends and kind of navigating your way through these worlds. In each mission takes around 15 minutes to 40 minutes, so you can be in and out. If you're a parent, you have to watch your kids. You can be in and out when it comes to playing these games, so it works really well in that regard. When it comes to live service games like Helldivers 2, I think one of the big things that a lot of companies may not expect is in the early days of Helldivers 2, I think that the producers did not expect this to be as big as it was. I don't think anybody expected
The servers were crashing left and right for like a good week to 10 days there.
Oh, dude, they were crashing all the time because like this is Helldivers 2. So there was a first one, but the first one, while having the same aesthetic, like played completely different. So I believe it had kind of a top-down.
Yeah, it was a top-down, like twin-stick shooter.
And so this one took a completely different approach. And one of the there's so many different moving pieces as to, I think that like with a lot of different video game companies, they're all searching for, everybody wants to be Fortnite, right? Or everybody wants to be you know, Destiny 2 or some live service game that has players coming back day after day to kind of do their dailies, you know, figure out and have fun and play with their friends. Helldivers 2, the reason it has become so successful and why it has had such staying power is, as I kind of mentioned, it's its simplicity, while also its incentives are extremely easy to get. You are constantly finding yourself getting new weapons on a steady clip. Like me personally, I'm level 21 right now, so I'm about like 4 levels from being able to get my first mech. I'm super excited to be able to jump into the mech. But Chelsea, we had a comment. Chelsea Greenway says, it has changed my husband. Yes, my wife is super happy with the fact that I'm spending so much time on Helldivers 2.
This is a very common thing, like on TikTok and stuff like that, too. There's been tons of trends that have been like, ask your husband what Helldivers is. And then, oh, my gosh, you got to save Super Earth. And it's just like these rants that guys go on. It's like,
we must protect democracy.
Yes.
And I think that what it's been able to do is that it's able, Helldivers 2 is able to give players a steady drip feed of incentives for playing. On top of the fact that it's a genuinely fun game to play. I love jumping into a match. I have to shout out my boys who are carrying me through a lot of this in Squee, Dobby, and Wolf, who are my current team that I'm playing with. They're real people. And I have been playing with them and kind of, it is so much fun to create strategies and work your way. You feel yourself, you feel your character and you feel yourself as a gamer kind of evolving with the game itself. I started originally playing on normal and now I'm routinely playing on extreme and suicide.
Okay.
We haven't hit Helldiver difficulty yet just because it's so tough. But Helldivers 2, as well as just all of the different aspects that they're kind of peppering in, another big thing that is such a boon for this game is the fact that if you look at the overworld, like the circular, like the different things that you dive into, it's like 1/50th of the over. There are so many parts that are blank, and I can totally see them kind of building that up into the future, adding new enemies, adding new weapons, adding all of these different things. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see all of that. And that's kind of the reason, long story short, of like why this has been able to infatuate players and everything.
You talking about like how you've started to scale up with the difficulty and stuff like that, it really reminds me sort of Left 4 Dead, if you played that back in the day. Like,
yeah,
the more you played that, the more you played it with like a dedicated group, it's like, okay, I think we can go up to hard, or I think we could go up to the extreme difficulty or whatever. And then you do it and you're just overrun. It's like, okay, well, maybe we're not that good yet. But like, you're constantly trying to, the game is incentivizing you to try out those higher difficulties too, because you'll get better rewards, or you'll unlock trophies or whatever if you hunt those. I know I do on PlayStation a lot. I think this game's like, to me, what this game does so well is it balances this perfect line of being a game for hardcore audiences. This is a hardcore co-op third person shooter, but at the same time, it's very casual. Like, this is a game that you can get sweaty with, if you want to say that, but it's also a game you can just sit down and kind of screw around and act like a moron with some friends, and you can do one or the other. Like, again, like if you're going to try to do this very specific mission in the game that you've been trying to plan, and you want to do it on a certain difficulty and you want everybody to execute to a perfect strategy that you've laid out, then you can do that. But you can also just kind of jump it and bounce around and shoot some bugs and shoot your friend in the head or to screw around with it. I mean, that was the first thing that I did, like the moment I booted it up and got in with some friends who had already been playing with me for a bit, as they dropped like an orbital strike right on me and just boom right away. And so it's got that level of, again, it's very hardcore, but it's also very casual, and it balances a great line between the two. I think,
it's true, because and I found for the good portion of time that I've been playing, I've been playing with my friends. But I have like had the opportunity to jump in with randos and just random people. And for the most part, like, I've never really encountered a game where I felt like the experience was ever ruined by, I mean, you can play it by yourself, but really the fun comes in playing with other people, and squads are just fantastic in terms, I think, everybody's kind of on the same page with it. And I never felt like my game suffered from the idea of like jumping in with people I didn't know or anything like that.
And there's not like an intrinsic like toxicity to the game's community either. Like you could jump in with randos and there would be the fear of, you know, like, this is a game where friendly fire's on. What if I just got people shooting me the whole time? But I've never had an experience like that either when I've jumped in with other people.
Yeah.
And so I think everybody is, you know, generally trying to have a good time in the community, which is impressive. Again, considering there's like 8 to 10 million copies of this game out there in the wild and people are continuing to hop on day after day. It seems like I'm very curious to see where this game kind of settles after having been on the market for about a year, because it just seems like they're continuing to add, like you mentioned, like new weapons. They haven't added new enemies or anything like that, but you can feel, it feels like they're going to add like a third enemy group coming at Super Earth from another direction, and then you'll have to fight the war on a third front. I can see things like that coming in due time.
One of the funny things about, and I don't know if everybody kind of knows this, but there's actually, and I can't remember his name, but there's one person who's kind of like a dungeon master in Dungeons and Dragons, who's kind of in charge of creating the story of Helldivers 2 and how it's kind of going to unfold moving into the future. Mm-hmm. And while there are some things in terms of, I'm sure that it's, you know, it takes a village to make all of these different things happen, there's one guy who's just in charge of creating all of this different stuff and is like constantly thinking about this. So I think that there's a lot of barriers to entry with a lot of games, and the fact that this one, you know, it's just $40. I know it's not mm-hmm. necessarily free to play, but it is just $40, so it has been able to sell so much because people have like been able to, well, you know, $40, I can give it a shot. Everything I'm seeing from this and all the viral moments that are coming from it, it's an easy sell.
People want to be a part of they want to be a part of the lingo attached to this game, like fight for democracy and, you know, protect Super Earth, all that sort of stuff. I think the one other big thing about this that I've realized is that there has not been a big co-op game in a mm-hmm. while like this. Like 10 to 12 years ago, maybe even before, like every game had tacked on co-op. Everything, like that was the flavor of the like Xbox 360 and PS3 generation, was tacked on multiplayer modes and couch co-op integrated. And that stuff really has fallen away over the course of the past decade. Mm-hmm. And this game coming about has really made me realize, like, we have not had a good co-op game, a co-op shooter specifically, in a really long time. You look at stuff like, you know, like Halo Infinite, like they're tacking it on at a later date. They're totally scrapping couch co-op from that, which I know upset a lot of people. I think there has been a hunger for a game of this style, and it has really come about at the perfect time to kind of satiate that desire. Also, as we're talking here, I just want to mention, I got a note off to the side, but PlayStation literally just announced, as we're recording this, that they're releasing a new War Bond next week on April 11th. That's going to add a bunch of new weapons. There's an exploding crossbow. There's an agitator.
Oh, interesting.
There's new thermite grenades, a grenade pistol. And so I think that's like a really... again, they're just keeping people engaged. And the War Bonds are a good way to do that because, again, it incentivizes you to get in there, do your dailies, do your weeklies, do your whatever. Like, you want to make sure that you're always running at least a couple little missions every day if you can, and rack up your in-game currency so that you can continue progressing in the War Bonds. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a good strategy for this game long term. The thing I want to talk about next, though, is like how this is going to potentially shape PlayStation's future overall, because for the past few years, if you've been following PlayStation, this generation with PlayStation has been a little bit weird. Like, we've had our big, you know, standout games, like we had Spider-Man last year, and we've had stuff like God of War Ragnarok, but if you've been following Sony, you know that they have been greenlighting a lot of live service games behind the scenes. At one point, I think they had 12 live service games in the works at a single point in time. Helldivers was one of those, but then I think other stuff, like, you know, like MLB The Show was probably involved with that. So when you account for certain things like that, it's maybe not as crazy as it seems to be. But I mean, we can even look at other stuff, like The Last of Us Online was a live service project that they had in the works that got canceled. There was a rumored Twisted Metal project in the works that also got canceled, which I know you said you're very disappointed about.
We
haven't seen Twisted Metal since the PS3 reboot, I believe.
Well, there was also Twisted Metal Online, which was kind of that, and that was released after Twisted Metal Black, which was kind of. I don't know the backstory in terms of like how that was put together and everything, but it felt like kind of a slapdash way of taking what had worked in Twisted Metal Black and kind of throwing it in there, which just was kind of at the wrong place and wrong time for this. Like the PS3, the online play in the PlayStation 3 wasn't that big.
PlayStation Network really took a while. Like Xbox Live had it all together kind of on the 360 era, and they knew what they were doing. PlayStation Network, it really took till about PS4.
It took some time. And the thing is, like, when you look at like Helldivers 2, right? They did not expect it to be big. I'm sure that they expected it to be big, but
they didn't expect it to be big, or else they would have given Arrowhead more servers at
at the beginning, for sure. Like but now that it's gotten big, it just goes to show, like, it's really hard to catch lightning in a bottle, and there are a lot of places like the Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League is a prime example of a studio that was attempting to create a live service game where it didn't necessarily take off in the way that they hoped that it would, whereas with Helldivers 2, they had no idea it would take off this big, and now they're kind of playing catch up in terms of making sure that they're going to be able to placate their player base, as well as like inject a lot of interesting things, which they're doing as you just mentioned with that new information that just dropped. Coming out this month. I think they're going to do a good job with that. I think that what works, and this kind of goes back to the idea of, because me as a huge Twisted Metal fan, I loved Twisted Metal 2 was my favorite game as a kid. I loved it. And I think you have to, if you want a live action service or a live service game to be a success, you can't tailor it. It's tough because you can't tailor it to try to be the next thing. You can't create a game where you go into it thinking this is going to be the next Fortnite or this is going to be the next Destiny 2. You have to create a game, like with Helldivers 2, it was a game that was clearly made by passionate developers who loved what they were doing. The game has its own identity, and it has all of these different elements that just work well in conjunction with each other. And that's how you have to create a game that is good. I mean, at the end of the day, it's funny to say that, but you have to create a game that is good, that will keep players engaged. And if it becomes bigger, then you kind of have to plan for that and expand upon that. Because I think Helldivers 2 is going to be around for years. Like, I think it has a long shelf life.
Well, that was going to be like, do you think this game's success up front? I imagine PlayStation Now wants this game to be a big pillar of the PlayStation ecosystem for many years to come. And I'm curious if this sort of, by PlayStation working on so many live service games at a single time, it was very apparent that they're like, we need our one, like we need our Fortnite. We need our, it's just weird to say Destiny, cause I guess they own Bungie and Destiny's been rough, but like, it was so clear that like, if we can just make so many of these games and just have one really grab onto an audience, then we'll be good. And because I think everybody realizes that if you can just integrate that market just a bit, you're going to be fine. And so I'm curious if they will now move to cancel some other projects behind the scenes, or what some of those other projects might be. Again, they've already canceled The Last of Us and Twisted Metal, but those cancellations happened before we knew that this was going to be a big hit. So I'm curious, they've got upcoming games that include Concord, which we still know nothing about. Bear Games is another one from a new studio that they have hired. I think it's the former Ubisoft exec. I forget her name. Jade Raymond, her studio. They're making a live service game. So I'm curious if now that they have one, if this is kind of what they envision having a hit in the live service space is going to look like, or if they still want like a multiplayer PvP style game, or a game where you're, you know, buying skins left and right rather than, you know, buying war bonds. I'm just very interested if they're satiated with how this game is doing from a live service model perspective.
Boy, I hope so. I hope companies can just be satiated with when a project becomes big, just like focus on that project and expand on that. Mm-hmm. And I think like with Helldivers 2 and the other stuff, I don't necessarily know if this will be if this game's success will necessarily mean that Sony will stop production on other stuff. I certainly think that like they're going to put more resources into this. I remember knowing that this was a success when Sony created an opening bumper for the game, you know, where they have like the Sony logo and they have the Helldivers characters in it. I was like, okay, they know it's big. There is a place in the live service game market. There's so many out there and they're all vying for players' time. Like at the end of the day, it's not so much the barrier to entry isn't necessarily price in a lot of situations, because there are a lot of free-to-play games, but it is like you only have so much time in a day. We all have responsibilities that we have to do, and you want to dedicate a certain amount of hours to, you know, any number of games that you are playing. So like with Helldivers 2 specifically, it's found that perfect balance. And, you know, if Sony sees a big success with this, I have to hope that they don't go more games like Helldivers. You know what I'm saying? Like more games where you have to call in air support or just create like, I was someone who was actually really looking forward to The Last of Us Online, because I thought that the playstyle of The Last of Us does lend itself to
factions was really popular, like the original multiplayer mode in the first game.
Yeah, for sure. And I thought like there was the idea of like you're diving in and you're becoming a member of the Fireflies and you're creating your own character, and The Last of Us does have a good identity for itself. People know what it is, they know that world, and it would be conducive to that. I was kind of sad to see that they're not going in that direction, but I hope that one of the takeaways from Helldivers 2 that Sony and other video game companies can have is make video games fun and make them original, because like especially with something like Twisted Metal Online, we don't have a car battle live service game. Mm-hmm. It could fill that role. And I do hope that that's kind of where these video game companies go moving forward, is creating these original works that are able to be a rewarding experience for the players while gamers are also having just a ball playing it.
Less stuff like Suicide Squad, more stuff like Helldivers. Suicide Squad very much feels like something that was crafted at a publisher level and then was a team was told to go make something like that.
Shame, because I was super, I've said this so many times when thinking about Suicide Squad, is that I was one of those freaks who was really looking forward to a game where I could play as Captain Boomerang and throw boomerangs at people, and then they're like,
they give you a shotgun.
And then they give you a shotgun. Like, dude, let me play as Captain Boomerang, man.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. One last thing on Helldivers, and then we're going to take a break here. This game, I think this game's biggest boon has been that it launched across both PS5 and PC at the same time. You know, mm-hmm. PlayStation's been bringing a lot of games to PC for multiple years now, but this is the first time we have seen an exclusive come to two platforms in this manner at the same time. I have to imagine this is something they're going to do a lot more in the future, especially for their service stuff. I mean, we might not see, you know, what the next God of War do this sort of thing, because people are still going to play that on PS5 or PS6, wherever the heck it is. But if they want their games to be big hits in the live service market, I feel like this just has to be something they always do, because I know people who in my friend group, and I don't know if it's the same for you, who don't own PlayStations, but they have been playing this game by picking it up on Steam and have been, mm-hmm. they were coming to me saying, hey, I know you have a PlayStation. We need to play this together, you know, buy Helldivers and I'll play it with you. And so I think the PC market is more than half of why this game is as big as it is.
Oh, for sure. I think that we're entering an interesting time for when it comes to console exclusivity and like PC exclusivity, Because I think that, like, especially with, like, the recent announcements by Microsoft when it came to bringing stuff like Grounded and what are the other Hi-Fi Rush and other stuff to the PlayStation 5 and things like that, I think that we're kind of seeing the levee start to break in terms of companies aren't feeling like they necessarily need to make stuff console exclusive. I think that we're still going to see that, but we're not going to necessarily see it as much, especially with, like you said, live service games, because you want Sony as a developer wants as many people as possible to jump into Helldivers 2. So of course have it on the PC as well. You'd know better than me, is Helldivers, it's on Xbox Series?
It's not on Xbox.
Oh, it's not on Xbox. No, not. I would imagine that maybe we'll see it on there.
I know Phil Spencer has expressed interest that he would like the game on Xbox.
Please. Just look at all those anything? Dollar signs. Please.
I don't know if that does anything to get PlayStation to play ball, but I don't know.
I mean, we'll see. Like, I don't know. I think, especially with, like, Nintendo, Nintendo's always different. Whoever knows, like, what they're going to make exclusive on their, on the Switch or what have you. But, like, Helldivers 2 seems like the perfect game. It's not necessarily a, it has some pretty graphics, but it's not necessarily a graphical powerhouse. So it could lend itself to, like, the Switch, you know, if folks wanted it to eventually show up there. But I think, like, as we, as these publishers kind of get more into the live service stuff, they'll probably want as many eyes as possible on a game and as many controllers playing it as possible. So I would hope that, you know, this would eventually be able to make that leap to as many platforms as possible.
I would hope so. The original game never came to Xbox, though, or Switch. It did come to Vita, though. So,
oh, did it really come to Vita? Oh, that's
crazy. I think it was originally only on Vita, but I might be wrong about that. And then maybe it came elsewhere. I can't remember. It was on Vita very, very early. We need to give...
Poor Vita.
I love Vita. I'll always stand Vita. We're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about more PlayStation goings on, specifically in regards to an upcoming event that they might be having this coming month and what we might see at that time. So be sure to come back in a second.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We are back with Quick Save. Our producer here, Peter, I thought he pulled it up, or he mentioned that he might play the new Warbond trailer for Helldivers 2 that has gone live here. So if you're watching on the video side, you can check that out, and we might take a look at it here as well. Do a live reaction here. I like when they come out with the new heavier armor.
Yeah, I'm not much of a heavy armor user, but it definitely has its uses.
I just like the cosmetic appeal of it more than anything. But yes, it's coming. These look like way more. All these weapons are far more like explosive.
Yeah.
I know the previous Warbond they came out with was like electricity based or whatever.
Yeah, the arc thrower. Yeah, and yeah. They had some good stuff in there.
They had a grenade. I think. Those are sick.
Yeah, I'm always looking for a method to take down chargers.
The Democratic Detonation Warbond. That's great. I mean, their marketing is so on point with this game. Like
it works so well because it's taking that Starship Troopers mentality, yes, and kind of blending it into the overall story, making it that much more fun. It really works.
And it's working well on their socials and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They continue to lean into it. Like I know when the flying bugs showed up a couple weeks ago, they're like, we've heard rumors of flying bugs,
but we can't, such a pain.
But Super Earth cannot confirm or deny whether this is true. And they're like in the game and everybody's like, what are you talking about? Like, so like the way that they screw around with the games community and stuff like that, I love it.
Works so well.
Let's talk about PlayStation. Again, I mentioned before the break, looks like PlayStation is about to have another big event here. Rumors started popping up on the internet this week that the next big PlayStation event should be happening in May 2024. Mm-hmm. This will be the second event they have had this year. They had a State of Play back in February. This next event, though, is said to be a PlayStation Showcase, which they don't do very often. And this ends up usually being where they talk more about their first-party stuff that they have coming up rather than partner projects. So what kind of stuff are you... assuming this happens. So we've got two things right now from the same source, Jeff Grubb over at Giant Bomb. He has said that he has heard that they will be showing off Silent Hill 2, the remake, which makes sense because it looks like that game's coming out this year. And then there will be a new Astrobot game that is rumored to show up as well, which I would be down for. I love the pack-in Astro's Playroom game on PS5. That's one of the best PS5 games, if you ask me.
Astrobot kind of works in the sense of showing off, like it's kind of the perfect introductory game to the PlayStation 5 because it showed off what the system could do. Mm-hmm. When it comes to Silent Hill 2 remake, for those who don't know, for me, Silent Hill 2 is my favorite horror game of all time.
Okay.
I don't think that there's been something that's been able to kind of top it for me. The remake, I've been tentatively cautious about it. I think
that last trailer looked real bad. We talked about that on Quick Save at the time when it debuted, but it looked
the thing
rough.
Of it is, like, the really tough thing of it is that Silent Hill is not Resident Evil. And that's very difficult to write. Sometimes I can understand why that would kind of be difficult to wrap some folks' head around, because it is survival horror. But like at the end of the day, Silent Hill is more of a cerebral, like you're in the shoes of a guy who is attempting to come to grips with his past, as well as like discover the secrets of, like, you know, regarding his dead wife as he enters into this town. But like combat in the original Silent Hill 2 was supposed to be bad.
And it was much more limited compared to Resident Evil games as well. And then the first trailer that they released that showed off gameplay for Silent Hill 2 was the combat trailer. Everybody's like, combat's not even a huge part of this game. What are you doing?
And it's like, you know, as big as Pyramid Head, aka Red Pyramid thing, has become for Konami and Silent Hill, like, it wasn't supposed to it's kind of a reflection of the town itself, and the I think is his name James Sunderland, the main character of Silent Hill 2. It's supposed to be a representation of a part of his broken psyche, not the mascot. It's kind of weird.
Well, I mean, anything that becomes popular, you know, you got to turn it into a plushie and sell it on the on the company website. So I think the Silent Hill 2 stuff is interesting because the game's developer Bloober Team, like every time that game has been shown or something has happened with that game, they've kind of come out afterwards and have been like, we don't have any control on like how this game is marketed or shown to the public. We have full confidence in the product. Like there's like some chippiness between them and Konami here, because I know when a lot of people hated that combat trailer, they're like, we didn't cut that trailer together. We had nothing to do with that. The game is very good. Trust us. And it's like, that's a weird statement to put out. So I'm very curious if they are truthful, if the game is very good, or if it's, you know, it's hard to say. Bloober Team's track record is very, very hit and miss, and it seems more often than not lately it has been miss. But that game looks like it's coming out this year. Supposedly the Metal Gear Solid 3 remake is releasing this year as well. That wasn't rumored to show up at this event, but I would not be shocked if it does and we get release dates for both of those Konami games. That's the one I'm really excited for. Metal Gear 3 is maybe like a top three or top five game ever for me. That's my favorite Metal Gear game. So
it earns that spot. We'll see, like especially with stuff like with Metal Gear, it's really tricky because you don't have Kojima there anymore as a part of, for those who don't know, Hideo Kojima. He was the creator of the Metal Gear franchise. He had a rather rough breakup with Konami. That did result in him creating Kojima Productions, at which point he created Death Stranding. He does have the new horror game OD, which I'm really looking forward to, because going back to Silent Hill, we were robbed of what might have been the greatest game of all time, Silent Hills, with just the sheer, to this day, it still hurts my heart, because it would have been Hideo Kojima, Guillermo del Toro, and amazing manga artist Junji Ito working on that game. And it would have been fantastic. So I hope that Konami can really create an amazing remake when it comes to Snake Eater, because like, as you said, that arguably the best Metal Gear Solid game, I think. Mm-hmm. Like,
I think it's considered by many to be like their favorite. Like it is.
Oh, for sure.
Those first three games are always, it's always one of those three, but I love three than any of the others.
The fight against the end, where you have to, like you have a sniper battle, like there was never anything else like it in video games. That was the thing, is like the Metal Gear Solid franchise introduced concepts and like different levels and locales that you just never seen before.
The best thing about that fight is that the end is an old man and he's dying, and if you decide to pause the game or stop there and you stop playing and you turn your console off, or you change the internal clock and turn it up by move forward maybe a couple days and then you go back into the fight, he's dead. He's just dead because time has passed and he's an old man, and that's his final thing he's doing in his life, is having a battle with Snake. Like there's so many weird things like that in those old Metal Gear games. Obviously the Psycho Mantis fight is well documented as being one of like the trippiest things of the PlayStation 1 era.
I see you are a fan of Castlevania. Yes, yeah, man. Yes. So good.
other than those potential games, like, is there anything else off the top of your head that you can think of that you would like to see from PlayStation's own studios? I jotted down a couple notable appearances that we might have. Ghost of Tsushima 2 has not been revealed yet. That's going to be a thing. Like we all know that's going to be a thing. That first game was hugely popular. It released back in 2020. So we're coming up on the 4-year anniversary of that, which means we have to figure out what that studio is doing, what Sucker Punch is doing. Mm. It feels about time for us to see that game. Do you have it? are you a fan of that first game, or do you want to see?
Yeah, I was a fan. I beat that. I beat Ghost of Tsushima. I had a lot of fun with it, especially like and going swinging back around to the online stuff that we were talking about earlier. Ghost of Tsushima did have a pretty strong online thing. Like
that they added way later for no cost. It was completely
free. Yeah, and like it didn't blow up like a lot of other, you know, online games, but it was like, it was an interesting, I remember spending a couple of hours on it, but I'm anxious to see kind of, I didn't have the chance to like play Rise of Ronin. So like, but from everything I heard, it just wasn't,
you don't have to,
it just didn't hit in that same way. So like, I'm looking forward. I would like to jump back into this, you know, this world, see what they're kind of doing in the future with it. And, Ghost of Tsushima, it was an amazing, strong first outing. So I do hope that they kind of go into that at the upcoming event.
Yeah, I was a little bit more down on that game than I think a lot of other people were. I liked a lot of aspects of it, but I think its open world felt pretty cookie cutter in a lot of ways. Like, run here, make a haiku, pet this fox, do this. It's just like, okay, like how many times can I do some of these things before they get kind of boring? So I'm hoping they...
Yeah.
Make the open world a little bit more interesting. And I think I will like that sequel far more than the original game. The other games I've kind of jotted down here, the other studios that we have not heard from so far in this PS5 era, which is a little bit unusual. Naughty Dog's been super quiet, and Naughty Dog is usually not quiet. They went on a tear there for, I want to say like 6 or 7, 8 years where they were revealing everything that they were doing at the earliest time possible. Like, hey, we're doing Uncharted 4, hey, we're doing, you know, Last of Us 2, and like these things didn't come out for long time. Like I think the Uncharted 4 was revealed like exactly when the PS4 launched, and then it didn't release for like 3.5 more years or something like that, and then Last of Us 2 was like a 4 or 5 year thing. Do you think they're going to show up with their next game? And if so, do you want it to be Last of Us 3, which is seems to be something they're working on, but also they have confirmed themselves that they're working on multiple single player projects. So it could be a completely new IP as well, which is what I would like to see them do personally. Where are you kind of at with them?
First off, I think we'll 100% at the very least get some kind of trailer for Last of Us 3. I think that like, especially one thing that I think that is such a good way to think about like how Last of Us 3 is going to be confirmed is the fact that like, hey, the HBO show needs more material, man. you gotta create a third game so we can have more seasons of that. Yeah. Because like, I don't know how much of that second season is going to cover part two and
I
everything.
I think they've said that it'll probably be 2 seasons. So part two will take them through season 3.
Okay.
Which hasn't been greenlit, but the showrunners already said like we're gonna have to do multiple seasons to cover the whole game.
I think that like I think it's a surefire bet. I think that, man, what was the you can help me out on this one. What was the other Naughty Dog one where you were the second son?
That was Infamous, and that was Infamous. By Sucker Punch. That was by the Ghost of Tsushima studio.
Oh, okay. I would like to see a return of that one, but because I was a big fan of like Second Son and everything.
It's kind of funny to me. It's always been funny to me that Infamous has gone away in the era where superhero stuff became more popular than like ever before. Because Second Son came out, I want to say in 2013 or 14. I think it was 14. Yeah, and then after that, like the MCU popped off for the next, you know, 5, 6 years, it became the biggest thing in the world. And it's like, Sony's like, well, we're done making superhero games. It's like, you probably do better making a superhero game now than ever before, I would imagine. But then again, I guess they've got Spider-Man and stuff like that.
Speaking of Spider-Man, I that's something that I would like to see at this PlayStation event is like, yeah, there are all the leaks and everything about like what's to come for Spider-Man. But like when I was playing Spider-Man 2 originally, and they gave you that, I'm sure we can, this isn't heavy spoilers or anything.
Yeah, but spoilers for Spider-Man 2, turn off the podcast or skip ahead a couple seconds if you don't want to hear.
Yeah, not even that big spoilers. But when they give you the opportunity to play as Venom, I could immediately see them just printing out money and like, this will be the DLC. So I would imagine that if they release a trailer at this PlayStation event where it's like Venom DLC, maybe you're fighting Carnage, who knows? I think that would be a Yeah, and they did also set that up in this game. So like that being the first DLC reveal, I think would work really well for this. Who knows? Maybe it'll come out this year. But like I figure they show a trailer for it and they start laying out some breadcrumbs. I think that would work pretty well.
I think the Venom spinoff or DLC, whatever type stuff for Spider-Man makes a bunch of sense because it also gives them the opportunity to introduce Eddie Brock and have him be the new like constant Venom in that universe rather than having it continue to be Harry, which is what I know they did in that game. And then that game had no mentions of Eddie Brock, but it seems like Venom will come back, but it doesn't seem like he'll come back as Harry probably. So I think that universe is rife to introduce Eddie Brock, which I would love to see. I'm always a purist when it comes to I want Spider-Man to be Peter Parker. I want Venom to be Eddie Brock. Like I want Carnage to be Cletus Cassidy. I want all these. I just like all the classic characters. So
Eddie Brock is a very good character. And yes. I was kind of sad to see from the build up to Spider-Man 2, it was kind of apparent like, oh, Harry's going to be Venom.
Yes.
We're going to see it. Like it just makes too much sense logically from the story, but like having Eddie Brock, setting him up as a character, you can do it very quickly in a DLC and just like send him on his way in terms of like, you know, setting him up, giving him his own thing and potentially having him appear in Spider-Man 3 as kind of an anti-hero or something. It would work pretty well.
Spider-Man 3 is looking like it's going to be very, very, very loaded with different characters.
Oh, so loaded.
Silk and potentially Carnage and Venom. It's just Doc Ock's involved, Green Goblin. There's going to be a lot going on in that game. The last thing I wanted to call out is Corey Barlog's next game is what I'm really, really excited to see. If you're not familiar with the name, Corey Barlog is the director of God of War, the 2018 God of War. He did not come back to direct God of War Ragnarok. He still had a role in creating that game, but he did not direct that. And he has made it known that he's since been directing something else internally at Santa Monica Studio. I want to know what the heck he's doing because it feels like he's making a new IP, which is very interesting because Santa Monica Studio has not really done anything major in its lifespan outside of the God of War series. I know in the past they worked on like a sci-fi IP at one point and that project ended up falling apart internally. And then they were like, okay, well now we'll go back to God of War. So they've never really strayed too far away from Kratos. And obviously we're going to get more God of War games in the future because that is the biggest PlayStation franchise of them all. Like that those games sell at a higher rate than even Spider-Man does. So we're going to get a new God of War game, but that's clearly not what Corey Barlog is working on. So I would be so fascinated to see what his game is and like how far away that is. And it's hard to say too much because obviously it could be anything.
Yeah.
But that would be like the biggest surprise that I would love to see next month.
I think that like, especially like looking at how, because especially when Ragnarok came out, I was trying to consume as much as I could of like God of War stuff. And so I did watch like the documentary, the behind the scenes making of and everything, like of the original game of Ragnarok. And Corey Barlog, he has such a passion for creating video games. And God of War itself, the 2018 God of War, was such a risk. Like, really, like, on so many different fronts. It was a risk in terms of completely recreating the play style of how the original God of War worked, as well as creating, effectively making Kratos into a new character. This character who was attempting to find redemption versus taking an innocent victim and shoving them into a gear in order to keep a gate open or some crazy stuff like that. So there is, it's kind of Corey's strength is twofold in the fact that he's able to really create these amazing experiences for the players in these games when it comes to their story, but is also has a lot of like interesting concepts and ideas for being able to inject something new into the medium. I think like the There's nothing that's been more satisfying in gaming than throwing Kratos' axe and calling it back.
Yes.
It's so simple. It's so simple on its face, but it works so well.
And there's so many uses for it between, like, you know, puzzles and the combat. Like they mix up how you can use it throughout the game, and it never gets old. I've replayed that 2018 game probably three times, I think, and it just
amazingly replayable. And like and while he didn't necessarily, you know, direct Ragnarok, you can still see obviously like his influence on it, and just how, you know, that story is in good hands moving forward. So like I'm anxious to see what he does. I think I'm down for it, whether it's a completely new IP or if he's, who knows, maybe he's brushing something off from Sony's past and putting a new spin on it, much like, you know, he did with Kratos. Who knows?
I mentioned before that Santa Monica had tried to work on a sci-fi property. Mm-hmm. I think PlayStation needs a sci-fi franchise. That's like the one thing I can't think of off the top of my head that they really have. You know, they've got a lot of kind of like Horizon's sci-fi, but it's like also like prehistoric in a weird way, you know. Yeah. It's like I think something very futuristic and very spacey would be cool to have as like to round out their portfolio or to add a new franchise to PlayStation. That's something I would very, very much like to see them do. Again, we don't know a lot about this event. It's just rumors for now, but it seems likely that they're going to hold a PlayStation showcase next month purely because they held a PlayStation showcase last year in May. So this seems like the window they're liking to go in right now when it comes to revealing their projects for the coming years or coming months. So hopefully we'll have more information to share about that in the coming weeks. And whenever that happens, I'm sure we will talk about it here on QuickSave. That's going to do it for today's episode. Evan, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We will absolutely have you back on here in the future to talk more about PlayStation, Helldivers, whatever the heck else is going on in video games. And that'll do it for today's episode. I've been Logan Moore. This is Evan Valentine. Thank you so much for watching, and be sure to subscribe to Comic Book Nation if you want to check out all of our other podcasts here as part of the Comic Book Nation Network. We've got the poll list. We've got, what is your anime show called on this?
Anime Initiative. We're about a month in.
Yeah, Anime Initiative is here, part of Comic Book Nation as well. We've got the main show, which goes live on Fridays. So be sure to subscribe to our feeds if you want to stay in touch with everything we're doing here. Until next time, everybody take it easy. Bye-bye. Oh,